I'm Colonel Steve Messenger, Garrison Commander of Fort McCoy, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Behind the Triad Leadership Podcast. Today we have a really great guest, Dr. Scott Rathgeber, CEO of Gunderson Health System. This organization has 11 hospitals, 14,000 employees, and before becoming a CEO, he was a medical vice president of hospital operations, neuroscience, general surgery. There's a lot here. I'm just going to, holy cow. I can't even spell some of these words. But more importantly, Dr. Rathgeber is a fellow student of leadership, a servant leader, an advocate of helping people, to include when Fort McCoy hosted our 13,500 Afghanis a year and a half ago. Scott, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Colonel. Appreciate it. And I think there's a whole lot of things there. I'm a developing servant leader. I don't think I'm quite there yet, if anyone ever is. So, my original job at Gunderson was as a gastroenterologist. So, I've been a doctor for a number of years as well. So, it's a good experience to be able to lead a health system.
So I really like that. I agree. We're all on a journey of leadership, and we've never arrived, whether you're a garrison commander, a private in the Army, a CEO, or an entry-level nurse. You're exactly right. So the listeners don't know this. We just ran around Fort McCoy for the past 2.5 hours. We saw a lot of things. What do you think of Fort McCoy before you got here, and what do you think of it now?
Well, I knew some of the history of Fort McCoy, and I've been here actually once on official capacity when the Afghan guests were here, and just to see the mobilization and how the base was caring for that large population in a very short time was really fascinating at the time, and I had a lot of admiration for it. But the other times I've been here at the ski hill and the tubing hill with my kids, but I didn't realize the breadth of activity that you have here. I knew it was a training ground, major training ground for the country, but just all of the assets you have and all the different ways that you train people was fascinating in the whole. And then seeing the medical simulation, what brave heroes there are to take care of really significant injuries in places that weren't as maybe sterile and clean and set up as well as our hospitals. So you saw
our medical simulation training center. You said you have medical simulation training as well. Yes. What's the kind of the difference between how we train and you train?
Yeah, so I mean we have what we call the ICE House, the Integrated Center for Excellence, and it has a couple of ORs, and they look like a hospital. They have lights. There's no gunfire going on, and we have pretty much every technology and piece that you might use in our ORs, and I would call it a much more controlled environment, although we have emergencies and stress and things as well, but I think it's a different level.
Yeah, we were in there, the lights were off, the gunfire's going.
Yeah.
I hope it's different than what you're doing.
Definitely is.
As well. So you spoke at the Servant Leadership Conference with me last month. We were there together. Okay. What was your core message that you put out?
Well, I think the core message was it's all about helping others do the work that they do. And I'm a leader. Yes, my title would say I'm a leader, but I'm really there to support and resource and make sure people have the training, the ability to do their jobs really well, and then get out of the way. So I think it's really about serving. As a leader, I'm serving the folks I'm leading, as well as collectively serving the patients that come to see us, but also their families and ultimately the community. We need to get, join hands with the other folks in the community, just like the base here, and get to know them and figure out how we can work together to keep folks as healthy as possible.
Yeah, so we say here the center of gravity, that's a Clausewitzian term, the hub of all power and movement on which everything depends is the soldier. Mm-hmm. Like we want to focus on the soldier. But as you said, it comes along with other things. The soldier has a family. The soldier has friends. The soldier has peers. The soldier has a community. And then we have to not just look out for the soldier, but also the community piece and integrate it all. I think that's challenging, though.
Yeah, I mean, like the soldier, though, at the end of the day, we're able to provide great quality care in a variety of ways, physical, emotional, spiritual, those sorts of things, because of the people who work and dedicate their lives to this profession. And so we never want to forget that, the the tip of our spear, so to speak, are people who are on the front lines, our nurses, our techs, our docs, and all the different allied health professions that come together to put our integrated system together. And it's not just those folks that you kind of see and recognize from TV and movies, but we have a whole host of folks who support those, whether it's in the IT areas, finance, HR, other support areas. That I tell them all, you're all in healthcare. Your primary job is caring for patients, and that's even if you're in the billing department, you're caring for them because you're part of the whole continuum of care that we provide. And if one of those breaks down, we don't provide the best care that that we are striving for.
Yeah, so we talk about that as comprehensive soldier fitness in the Army, and that's spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, and family. And now it's called holistic health and fitness. And it's hard, right? We have 560 employees here at the garrison. There's 3,000 people on the installation. You have 14,000 people in your system. And how do you, we have the same problem, how do you reach out and try and get people holistically healthy in all these dimensions and provide opportunity for that?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing, if we can't do that for the people who work, for the organization, then how can we expect to do that for the rest of the community? So we focus on, treating everybody as an individual, and they all have different varied needs. And it's very difficult to have that personalized sort of care, whether it's your staff or patients or their families that are coming in. But I think it starts with a curiosity and wanting to understand and learn and listen to what the patients tell you, our staff are telling us on what they need, and they usually know. And so we want to listen and then believe them, and then put programs and things around them to help them. And a lot of times it's making sure that they have the almost permission to have some of these issues, right? I mean, there's a lot of stigma and things that are out, but we're trying to wash those away because people need support in multiple ways, multiple different levels, and we want to make sure that we have the services, but that people feel that they can avail them of it.
Yeah, so we talked a little in the car about this. Stigmas are hard, especially in the military. The history of the military going back 248 years is that you're a soldier and you don't need to get help. You don't need to find mental counseling. You don't need a psychologist. When in reality, instead of seeing that as weak, we need to see that as strong and being willing to embrace those areas. How do you kind of push that message out to your people?
Well, my entire medical career has been, there's physical health and then there's mental health, and that's usually under a little bit of a blanket and a cloud, but we've really been working very hard to, mental health is health, and it's directly connected to what we would normally call your physical health, and you can't separate the two out. So thankfully in Wisconsin we've worked pretty hard and have gotten a lot of traction about putting the records together and not having secrets so that you can actually see the whole person. And so I think you have to just say it's all healthcare at the end of the day. There isn't specific things that are different. And how do you get that message out? You talk about it, you then demonstrate it. And then, so from a leadership standpoint, we're talking about the importance of all these different facets all of the time. We're putting out what are the resources that we need. Again, we're saying we understand that people have these issues. They're human beings, and so you shouldn't feel ashamed or want to hide these things. We want to, have the holistic approach, and then it's a matter of, reinforcing when people do avail themselves of those services. Celebrate that we're helping people and not like making them an example of, this was a weakness or whatever, because it's not. It's actually, we try to lift up people who want to do self-care or, take care of themselves. If you're going to be an effective caregiver, you have to be whole as well. Yeah. And so it's kind of, we have that message of, it's kind of your duty to be the best for your patient is to be the best for you too. And connect their passion to the purpose of what they're coming in for, which is caring for patients and families. So I'll put myself on the back burner because that's super important. But it's like, but you need to have your whole self available for them. And so it's all part of the continuum, and it's how we continue to push that message, because we do have the opposing, you know, sort of views and forces in the history that we're trying to get passed. But I think we're making some progress. We're much more public about, you know, grieving and understanding and talking about, you know, the stressors that, you know, people in every profession have, but we have special ones in medicine, and you know, the pandemic brought a lot of that out, and so we don't hide it. We say, hey, this is, we're all experiencing this together. How do we then together heal ourselves so that we can be available for the patients who we want to care for?
Yeah, I love these podcasts because I learned so much in them, and you just talked about how you as a leader need to be healthy yourself in order to lead a healthy organization. And I think whether you're in charge of a team of four or whether you're in charge of a garrison of thousands or whether a CEO of tens of thousands, right, you have to set the example in healthiness. And I've never gone to counseling before, never. But when I got here, I'm like, oh, we have a counselor on Fort McCoy, and I'm going to give it a shot. And then I went in and did a session, and it was great. And I've never done it before. It's just, and then that's the story I tell. You mentioned you have to communicate, and we talk about change, right? Over-communicate your message. How do you communicate to a force of 17,000 people and get your messages across?
Well, that's really difficult. So I can't be everywhere at all times, of course. I try to set the course. Learned a lot through the pandemic with a lot of video. I was present probably more video than I was in person because we have, you know, 100 different sites, so can't be visible there. But I could be very visible through videos, and we were we did a lot of those to try to continue to build, you know, reinforce what our messages, but also, you know, give folks hope and build up the great things they were doing and celebrate. So I try to be as visible in both in person and, you know, in those virtual areas as much as I can. But I'll be honest with you, you know, I don't touch everybody, but I do, you know, the leadership team, the executive leadership team, and our directors, I do touch those a lot more, and so I want to make sure that they are empowered to carry that message. And the matter of alignment of the message is really important to me because, I don't know, you probably feel this too, but you say something, you say, this is what we're about, this is our purpose, this is our mission. And then you're like, well, I hope three layers down they're saying the same thing, right? Otherwise, we're not coordinated. And so it's a matter of having some checks and balances. I'll go out and talk to frontline folks and say, well, how's it going? And, you know, what are you thinking? And not only do I get their ideas on how to get to make the organization better, but also I get a sense for whether or not that you know, we're aligned and things are filtering down in a consistent fashion. Because we have to kind of all be speaking from the same, the same notes, so to speak, in order to really reinforce that. And it all comes down ultimately to make the decisions that you think are right at whatever level of the organization. Long as you are connected to our vision and our mission, and you can say, this is why I did that, might not be the same decision I would make, but I'm going to support you because you did it for the right reasons.
Yeah, so everything you're talking about, you don't know this, but it's all Army doctrine. And I love it because you're talking about, and we said in the car, the NCO Corps, the non-commissioned officer corps, is the backbone of our organization, because they're going to go out and take disciplined initiative based on commander's intent to go make something happen. And that's exactly what it sounds like you're doing without using our doctrinal terms, right?
Yeah, I found that to be really quite fascinating because it's not just, well, I got to wait for an order. Right. And that's not how we work either. We're like, you know, go do the right thing. You know what we're trying to do. And I kind of usually liken it with, you know, we're in the Mississippi Valley. We have the really beautiful bluffs. And so we have the river. And I'm like, OK, the river's going to a destination. So that's our vision. We know where we're going. We know the direction that we're flowing. And we have boundaries, the bluffs. So we set those and then we say, OK, you navigate the channel. You know, you try to get to where we're going based on the knowledge of those other pieces, and then I'm out, right? And then I'm just there to support and resource and educate people once they understand what that vision and mission is.
That is such a great narrative when you can look every day and see the Mississippi River right out your window, mm-hmm. or the employees can, and drive across it all the time. That's brilliant. You talk about the future of the community. Right, we're talking about community, and you're a really great advocate of it while running an organization that's designed to help the community. How do you lay out this vision of the community? How do you see the community integration, and then how are you taking steps to achieve that?
Yeah, so I think that's actually one of the things that drove our recent merger with Bellin Health on the other side of the state. What we had in common was our deep commitment to the community. And we wanted to make sure that we were able to continue to be able to do that 10, 15, 20 years from now. And we think, you know, together with the same culture and mission, we're going to be better off doing that. But the community is, you know, how do we do that? We don't do it by ourselves is the key, is we need to go out. There are so many resources. There's actually an abundance of resources and people who want to help. I don't know if it's all over the world, but certainly in the Cooley region, there are a lot of folks who are interested in improving the health and well-being and the vitality, thrivability of communities, that we just have to work together and coordinate that. So we're really good. If you're sick and come to see us, we're really good at that. But if you have housing issues or transportation, you can't get to see us, you have food insecurity or addiction issues, you know, we have some expertise in those areas, but other folks have more expertise. And so we found a really great opportunity to kind of join hands with other resources in the community. And the more that we coordinate those together, the better off our community is. And so it's not all about what we can do. We are a piece of it. And we think it's an important piece. But when we talk about, you know, the larger mission of the organization, it's going to sound weird, but we want people to not need us as much. If people are healthier, they actually won't need to come to see us. Now, they're always going to need some of our services, but if we're really striving for a future of a thriving community, we want them to be healthy and not come to see us. And then that filters into the cost of our care, which, you know, medical care is very expensive. And so if we can decrease the need for our services and not take as much of the resource, you know, the financial resources of the community to care for them because they're healthier, that's more money for schools and roads and, you know, other services that that the government or other private businesses provide. And so we're very connected to how all those things fit together, and especially the financial part, is that we can't just continue to take more and more. We have to make sure that we're doing what we can to, you know, businesses will be better off thriving if they, you know, have less of their, you know, their costs being healthcare. So we own part of that, and it's it's one of the big parts of our mission around community.
So I love that focus, because Fort McCoy can easily be seen as this organization behind a fence line, right? Our 6,000 acres, and we have a fence, and you can't come in. You need to scan an ID card to show up. But the reality is, we are part of the community. Our people live in the community. They work and go to school with the kids of the people that work for you. And that's why we're here today, to try and integrate both. We do a really hard push with the universities that are floating out there, with the hospitals, with the chambers of commerce, and how do we collectively have an enterprise approach to community, whether it's federal, state, or private, and improve the community. And you've done a real good job of that. Your organization has, and earned the Wisconsin.
I just want to say it was surprisingly easy to get in when the commander's in the van with you. But you know, I think that's another thing that, you know, I kind of knew, but I learned today was, you know, you have a community here that actually most of the folks live in the community surrounding the base. And we've always known the base is a great economic engine for our area. Even we talked about our airport probably doesn't exist if it doesn't have, the Fort McCoy soldiers coming in and out. But you know, you have a lot of folks who are not soldiers who work here and support the base, but then they are out in the community and they're using our healthcare, services, and you know, it's a really great way to, you know, put the base together with, you know, the rest. You're not separate, all right? You have fences, yes, I get it, but you're not separate, and I think we understand, you know, the great benefit of just having you here on a regular basis. And then when you have something like the Afghan refugees, you know, where did they go? They came right here. And you did a beautiful job of taking care of that vulnerable population. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I appreciate very impressive. You saying that. And that was a community effort for that Afghan mission. Of course, Gunderson had a big part in it, Mayo, the communities, the local services. Like, it was incredible how many people came together to do that. We did have a $2.5 billion economic impact to the community this year, which is mind-blowing. So you recently earned the Wisconsin Global Vision Award due to your work in homelessness across the community. So why was this homelessness one of your focus areas, and how did you get there?
Well, I had one of my my staff who was very influential and persuasive. Her name is Sandy Brecky, and she came to me when I was first as a CEO in 2015, and she said, you know, hey, I'm really interested about the community. At that time, she was not working for Gunderson, but she was with the St. Clair Health Mission, and you know, we were trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do in the community, and how should we go about this? And turns out there's homeless folks. None of them have insurance, by the way, and they do come to our areas, but they're really hard to care for because of the situation they were in. And so we really chose that as a very vulnerable population that needed some help. And, you know, we didn't have thousands and thousands of folks like some of the cities, but we, you know, every person who doesn't have a home is unsheltered is, you know, kind of a tragedy for the community. So we decided that we wanted to be part of the solution, but only part, because we couldn't do it all, as I said before. And so we looked for other resources and worked with a number of great organizations La Crosse, including Mayo, and Catholic Charities, and a number of Salvation Army. Lots of, you know, there's probably 100. I'm going to miss them all, but we decided we need to pool what we need and work on this problem. And the interesting part was that the solution to the problem is really to get them housed, and then work on all the other reasons on why they're homeless. And that took actually a coalition of landlords and things to get them in. Because we traditionally we'd say, okay, if you get your mental health taken care of and your addiction resolved and you know, any other anger issues you might have, and then get your health a little bit better, then we'll get you a place to stay. Well, that's impossible to do, right? So we put that on its head because there were some other projects going on in the country, and we invited one of the leaders of that movement to come in and put us together and work done. And we ended up housing a lot of we started with veterans, actually. We wanted to house every homeless veteran in La Crosse. And, you know, there was, I don't know, 15, 20. I mean, it wasn't like hundreds. But, you know, the VA had had resources to vouchers and things to pay for the housing. And I remember having a conversation with one of the leaders in town, and said, hey, you know, every Christmas we go around and collect the homeless veterans and we give them a nice dinner. And I'm like, well, I actually said, well, what if we didn't have any homeless veterans? And you went around and there's nobody to pick up. And he kind of looked at me like, well, that's an interesting way to look at it. And so we ended up being able to house those as our first group. And then we moved out to, you know, homeless individuals. And then, you know, interestingly enough, homeless families that you kind of, they go under the radar, but there's a huge amount of need. The pandemic grew that population, unfortunately, and we're still battling to try to find a comprehensive solution. But it was a really good opportunity, again, to work with those community resources, and there were plenty of people who care deeply about this, and we were able to branch that out to working on addictions and some of those which are peripheral issues, of course, with homelessness, but bigger than that. So we've used that model pretty well to, again, work in the community. We don't lead this stuff. We just are a partner and bring some expertise, but look for other expertise. And probably the most beautiful thing about the La Crosse Collaborative to End Homelessness was it was led by the sisters, the Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. So, that who's going to argue against the sisters, right? So the two healthcare systems work together, but we weren't trying to vie who's in charge and who's going to get all the credit. It was like, nope, we'll let the sisters lead us, and they did a remarkable job of getting the community together. That was a long answer for question how we got into homelessness.
That was an awesome answer, and I love the way you cast vision. What if there weren't any homeless veterans? And I do that all the time. What if we didn't have any personnel challenges because we were at 100% hiring fill? And it just makes people really want to get after solving these problems. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, my predecessor at Gunderson as a CEO, Jeff Thompson, you know, used to say, well, let's, you know, decrease our harm and improve our safety, you know, to get to the 90th percentile. And he always said, why couldn't it be zero? Yeah. Why are we not going for zero? And so once you put that out there, then nothing short of that matters. Yeah. And you continue to drive and drive and drive toward that perfection. And something that he taught me to, you know, question the norms of what we accept and say, well, what if the world were different?
And that makes people uncomfortable. When you're like, what if we were perfect? It's like, I know we'll never be perfect, right? But what if we were?
Right.
And let's go strive for that. That's awesome. Well, as we wind up our time here, is there any final parting shots of leadership or wisdom that you would like to mention?
I don't know if I have any wisdom ever regarding this, but you know, the one thing that, you know, I think one of your questions that you'd sent earlier was, you know, what have you learned, or what kind of mistakes you've made? So I will tell folks, this is the thing that really always rings true to me. When I first started to do leadership, people would come to me and they would have an issue and they would have a problem, and they would, I would sit and listen and say, okay, thank you, I think I can solve this for you. So then I would go off and I would think about the perfect plan to solve their issue. And I would come back and I would lay it out and say, isn't this a great plan? And they would go, what are you doing? I multiple times I failed at not being able to solve the problem because I didn't learn the lesson until, unfortunately, a few times, that they weren't there to help, to have me solve their problem. They wanted us to solve our problems together, and them to be part of the solution and developing that. So I've taken that now. You know, I'm the CEO of an organization, but I'm not the answer man. I'm not the guy who has all the solutions. What I have is the ability to bring people together, define a problem, and let them solve it. Because I can guarantee you, every time that happened, the ultimate solution of having all the stakeholders and all the folks who are involved figure it out, way better than the one I came up with by myself. So if I can give anybody leadership advice, it's like they aren't asking you to solve their problem. They're asking you to help them solve the problem. And that's going to get you a lot better answers.
That was awesome. I hope you're taking notes for next Servant Leadership Conference. you just wrote your speech right there. Hey, Doc, I appreciate you joining us on the Behind the Triad Leadership Podcast. This has been a great experience for me. Thanks for joining us here, and thanks for coming out, and we hope to host you again someday.
Thanks, Colonel. Appreciate all that you are doing and all the folks that are protecting our country. And it's sometimes a thankless job, but you please know that there are many, many, many people who really appreciate the sacrifice.
Thanks, Doc. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
And we'll see you next time on the Leadership Podcast.